So what questions? What do you guys have on your mind? Had a great late start.
I do still. Okay. I mean, yeah, we had a great meeting last night. It was a lot. It was good to hear medical evidence again, because we had seen some of the email attachments. The group, the committee that's done the work on it. You know, kudos to them spending the time. It's something. I've been living here since 2001. I moved from Southern California. I'm an attorney. I have a part-time practice now, but I have twins that are 15-year-olds and are sophomores. And I got to tell you, they went through Parleys. We've done Treasure. They've done Band. They've done it all, okay? They're now sophomores. Years past, we always dreaded the early start of high school. And I wish I'd gotten involved a little earlier in that process, but because I remember about 5 years ago, a mother saying, I can't believe my son has to take the 0 hour for the physics lab. And, you know, at the time I thought, oh, I hope I don't have to worry about that. But I didn't even know if I would have a kid that would really be drawn to do that, etc. Well, I do. And I think that we have a community that's so well educated, that is trying to compete internationally and nationally. And we have all these great AP classes. And we're very driven, this community, and we're affluent, and we are trying to compete, and our kids are taking these heavy loads, and they want to succeed and do this, and so there we are. We do have the physics lab at 0 hour. Well, my kids, we live in Ranch Place. They get up at 6 a.m. They have a bus at 6:47. That actually just got combined, and they're now going 8 minutes earlier now. They get picked up at 6:47 a.m., okay, to ride that bus. And next year, I'm looking at one who wants to do that physics class, and he's gonna be in that 0 hour. And I'm just really worried. I mean, we turn off screens at 9:30, but they are teenagers that can't turn their own brains off until 10. We talked about it last night. You know, Mary, I have one son who's a 4.0, doing the deal, doing all these classes. I don't know how in the world he's going to fit in the time. I mean, he's going to fit it in on the other time, on the other end of the day. But I think he does need to sleep. And just to let you know, too, he runs track after school. We've done the busing. He does debate, so I understand that we have to get to these places after school. He's willing to make up the time, and does make up the time with those teachers. But we, and for also for the last couple of years, we've had surveys about the school start, and we've had surveys about the when does school start in terms of the year. And every time I fill out the survey and go, let's extend, let's do something so we can build more time for these kids to have the rest that they need. And now we have all the medical evidence. We got to do this. And for once, I'm really kind of being selfish, going, could we just do this so maybe my family could benefit from it instead of waiting for another 2 years? Because, what will I be able to do at that point?
Can you define 0 hour?
Oh, right. So 0 hour is an hour before school starts. So 6:15, and they do typically your labs. So AP Chem, AP Physics is when we have those, because then most of those kids that are unfortunately taking those are also in sports after school.
Did you say 6:15?
So why is it that,
you guys? It's brutal.
Built into the curriculum.
Wow.
Why isn't that just part of the class?
It's an extra.
Is it every day? Once a
no.
week?
It's no. Every
what
other.
It is, it's an AP Chem. That class.
It's not required. So it's not required that you go, but it's the extra piece that if you want to do really, really well, the kids go to. And it also has to do with our scheduling. And this is something that. We're still a small district, and it's hard to explain, but one of the hardest things I've ever worked on was learning how to do the master schedule, because you have singletons. So maybe you only have, one class of AP Physics, one class of AP Chem. you know, then you have band, and then it runs the entire schedule. And so it's really, you have to, it's a complex math problem. You have to know all the matrices of how to shuffle. And that's what they're working on right now. I mean, it's a massive, massive project.
Is that why they really have to start scheduling in March?
Yes.
Because I don't think a lot of us parents understand it, because, I mean, when I got the paper that says you got to pick your classes in March,
yep.
I thought, what? No, yeah, no. Do we really, does it really
It also
make
has
it
to
that
go with staffing.
To yeah. schedule not 1,200 students?
Yeah. But it has to do with staffing, too. It has to do with how many, you know, what class, who's teaching what do we need. I mean, right now we're looking at Treasure Mountain, we have classes for math. And there's a couple classes, unfortunately, of like 38. So we're looking at how many math teachers do we need to hire? So it has a lot to in our budget season for us then to be able to add teachers appropriately.
If I understand the 0 hour correctly, part of the scheduling problem you run into is the buses, and that you're utilizing the same buses to run full loops. And they, I mean, where we live, we see them just perpetually going. They do not sit idle.
No.
At all.
And that's another thing. I mean, we think while Park City is small, our bus routes are actually pretty wide. And maximizing those routes and making sure, that's another one that is really interesting to get into the details of. And oftentimes that's, you know, there's empty buses. Yeah, because they're going out for another route to go get someone else.
They're doing the next school.
Yeah.
That's something we've noticed with the buses. I know where we are. When you think about the starts, there's the early start at the high school, and if it moved, for a lot of us, my son's finished at Ecker this year, so it won't impact us. But a lot of parents have talked about how hard it is to work and have children start so late in the day without anything.
It is. And
I'm very blessed with a responsible son, but he walks to school, and there's no sidewalk where he walks.
Yeah.
And so that's been really tough for us.
And I think that as we look long term, you know, as you looked at the, I don't know how many of you were there, and I wish I actually had the handout, but it had basically where Ecker Hill would be the first one. The if we swapped it, Ecker Hill would start the earliest. And so you think, okay, that's 2 years of starting early. They're just, you know, they're just getting in that pre-adolescent type physiological changes. And so you're thinking, okay, 2 years. However, if we look at building that 5-6 out there, you know, then that's 4 years of getting up early. So, I mean, I think that's why.
The elementary go first? Was it? I didn't even really talk about that.
Right.
We're all thinking that young kids do get up early.
Right.
And I have experience with that. I wanted him to go to school by, you know, 7:30.
Oh my God, I do too.
I'm not in that boat.
Yeah, I am.
They go to bed at 8, they would sleep till 8.
Yeah.
You are so lucky. Can I trade you a kid?
Yeah.
12 hours.
Yeah.
I have a clock in my room that he can't get out of bed until the clock lights up.
Yeah.
Oh no, he gets up like 4:35 and I'm like, you're killing me.
So, what time would the elementary
Seven. Okay, so the way I, and I'm going off memory right now, we had just really got the times, and I think that's the other thing is, you know, we're running these, and before we present it to the community, we want to make sure that we're presenting with as much detail and accuracy, so it feels like we're dragging our feet. And so it was just last night that we finally got the actual
scenario.
And Molly, you might help me out. Was it the elementary started at, it started still at 8:15?
Yes, so the elementary school would be too much earlier, but there's a 2-bell scenario and a 3-bell scenario. So the 2-bell scenario would cost a lot more money to implement.
Mm-hmm.
And the 3-bell scenario, it's just, I don't remember exactly what the bell time is.
John, you can sit by me. I won't bite.
Bye.
No, please.
Hi,
Scott. Nice to meet you.
There's a roller one.
Absolutely. Even half hours would help. I mean, I know that the study said 8:30. The you know, if we're really looking at the medicine said 8, that's what the pediatricians said, 8:30. But even 8 o'clock would help this you know, how many kids do we have in the high school? 1,200 kids? To help 1,200 individuals do better with more rest by starting at 8, perhaps,
and the 3-bell schedule
instead of 7:30.
Yes.
You know, it's little baby steps is what we're asking for.
Right, and so we looked at that. The 2-bell system requires a pretty large piece of capital, as well as, I want to say it was close to $1 million in capital to buy new buses, the additional buses. And then, of course, your ongoing cost of bus drivers, which right now we can't even get enough bus drivers, which, I mean, that's another complex issue that we're working through as far as, you know, having better pay and long term and over the 12 months.
And a 3-bell schedule would have the high school starting at 9, and that's to kind of get around the traffic issue as well.
When would they finish if they started?
4. And that's another thing that
athletic practice after that.
Extracurriculars.
I think 9 is so late. I mean, just logically, does everybody feel that that is like way too late?
It has to do
so,
with.
I know, but
transportation's
It's a big issue, but we spend a lot of money on a lot of things in this community, and I think we can solve some transportation issues. And you're still going to have people driving.
So I'll share something that I. And actually, I think some of you were in our planning session that you heard our administrators say, and I'm gonna voice their concern. If we're putting, you know, if we're looking at adding capital funds into buying buses before we're addressing the needs at our facilities, that really that concerned our administrators and our leaders of the district, you know, and so that was something to at least that I need to voice just as a balance for that. And I certainly, I mean, I see the balance of later start times. And most of you know, I have a senior that stays up till 11 that I'm pounding on the downstairs and I turn the radio down.
You go to bed that early?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I did.
Yeah, she's pretty good at 11 o'clock, but, yeah. And it's hard in the mornings. It is.
Well, I think you addressed it last night, too, that it's an interwoven issue because of the 88-minute class schedule, and it's all, you know, if you talk to most of the students, they're saying that the class periods are too long, and that is what's extending the day, you know.
I just had a flashback. I was a high school principal, and the hardest thing I ever tried to do was to change from a 4x4 block to 7-period. I'll be honest, my staff finally ate me alive, and I finally put my white flag up and said, okay, you win.
They got two
yeah, oh my gosh.
I remember high school, I think I had 45-minute classes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that about what it was?
45, 50 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
That changed when I was in my high school, too. We changed from block, and it was, I thought the scheduling worked better. I mean, you have more space, right,
to run all the classes? So if you go to a 7-period day, one, it's more cost efficient instead of block scheduling.
Yeah.
Block scheduling is very high staff. It costs more because it is more staff intensive. But I mean, we've seen a lot of success with our block period at the high school. You know, we do have high achieving students, and the teachers are making it work. So, my preference, let's go three 90-minute periods and extend the day to 220 or 220 days in the calendar. I would be really happy with that.
Can I ask a question?
We have 180, and that's mandated by the state. And so then if we add any more, of course, it's about $120,000 a day to pay our staff. So as you add days, that's how it's calculated.
What does the staff think of all of this too? Because the big thing I think as we go forward, we're getting so few people getting trained in education now. What does it take to keep the staff we have? They're so amazing,
you know,
compared to other places.
Yeah. So I love Utah. There's 41 superintendents in Utah, and it's the first time that I can say that when we all meet together, we have monthly meetings. And so that issue is an issue for a lot of other districts as far as keeping staff. It's not an issue in Park City. We get teachers, and we have our average is about, and I was shocked. Our average teacher's been here 15 years. Now we're starting to get more retirements because we have a veteran staff that's now starting to retire. But we don't, you know.
We pay better.
Retention is not an issue for us.
Yeah.
So I think we pay better.
Oh, we pay, and I'm going to tell you, our insurance is Cadillac
insurance.
I got a call before the meeting last night from Mark Parker, who's a ninth grade Hunter's English teacher and a good friend of mine. And he had strep, and he couldn't go to the meeting. And so he said, if you get the chance. So Mark said to me that he's got 9 a.m., you know, he's got ninth graders at first period that are dead asleep. And I'm a guest speaker in this class every year I speak to every section. And the difference between that first period and later is mind blowing. And he said, look, you know, for the people who are worried about sports practices, put sports practices early in the morning. Because and there's so much science that backs that up, that says get your endorphins going, you'll learn better, wake up that way. So that's only one teacher, but I've spoken to a lot of teachers who feel similar.
Right. And I think I know Bob O'Connor has done an informal survey, and this is just the timing of it. We want to make sure that, you know, we get a pulse of the community to see what, you know, looking at research. That's why we did last night. And then as we just continue to move forward with working with the students and the staff. But I think there was a great comment by one of our teachers, and she's a wonderful inspirational teacher at Ecker Hill, and she has young ones, and she said, you know, I teach at Ecker, I need to make sure to know what I'm doing so I can then get appropriate daycare for my own, you know, what time am I gonna have to be at work to get my kids, you know, at daycare. So there's factors of that we just have to be aware of.
I think we're a smart, cooperative community, and any of these are just challenges to figure out. And if we need a different daycare system, we've already managed in the community. Right, yeah. Obviously. But if we need a different setup, obviously on a cultural level, we need a different system. But if we've already figured out how to fix one of the big daycare problems in this community, we can figure out another one.
Right.
If we can get the county and the city on board to help us figure out really truly how to mitigate the traffic, here's what we need to do that's best for all of our children. Help us.
Well, you know, and that's interesting because one of the ripple effects has been our after school program. So let's say that our students do start, our elementary students start earlier, which means then that they get out earlier, which means then that we have our after school programs. So then we're gonna have to have more, it's either the tuition will have to go up in those after school cares, like our Camp Hawk camp, there's four of them.
Yeah.
You know, so the tuition will have to go up there because they're there longer until 5:30 for working parents. So again, it's just that one more ripple effect that we have to be thoughtful of.
So switching, go ahead.
I'm just saying, people have had to deal with that forever. You know, if they go to work till at 5:30, that's not a new, those aren't new issues. And working, you know, working parents have had kids forever, and we all have to deal with that. You know, but I do know, I mean, how many of us at this table started elementary, middle or high school at 6:30 or 7:30. Raise your hand. Maybe 7:30, but we started at 8:00 and we got out at 3:00 and we still did the sports and the debate and the dance and the everything else that we did, and we also got bused many places very far. So we can do this.
You got bused once, you missed the bus at school ends. Get a ride and you'll walk. That's how it works.
Yeah, this would be a little tough.
One set of buses when I, in our process, and still in my same school, same thing. Yeah. Buses leave at a certain time. If you got after sport, deal with it. deal with your parents, find your way home. There's no multiple bus systems.
The high school I attended in Vermont for a year was 808 to 216. Times were so weird that I remember them coming.
Actually, there's science behind doing that.
Later,
you actually are prompter.
You're on time.
Yes.
What was that?
137.
They do the weird times that you're on time?
Yes. Yeah. There's science behind that that says if you do it at on time, kids will remember and then they'll be on time.
705.
Exactly. Oh, yes.
It works.
Weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
works. For some
random math fact.
Because then they're thinking at 7 I need to be there.
Yeah.
So it's all mind games. Yeah. I do it to myself all the time.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of talk about the traffic, you know, and we only have two ways in, et cetera, but we just got to deal with that too. We've got so much traffic in, you know, and the buses can do that extra lane. If we work with the city, and there are special rules during Sundance, they get to go down the side lane and, you know, that third lane. And I just know that this is not an insurmountable problem.
I'd
like to see it fixed sooner rather than later, for once.
Before you
after 15 years, you know, for once I'm doing the NIMBY, really like it.
I wanted to play on the teacher feedback thing and explore that a little more. So you had this teacher survey. Have the results ever been?
What teacher survey?
Here.
Which one?
There was one back in February at the board meeting. The board members did it, and you said at the retreat, I think Julie Hastings had presented some initial.
Thank you for asking that.
And then I guess on top of that, I've gotten the sense that teachers are sort of like fearful to speak out. Principals, I've gotten comments like, well, I agreed with that because of my position and I sort of had to. And I'm sort of afraid of this culture of teachers
and principals. Thank you for asking this.
Not speaking their mind. Yeah, I think it's a big issue though, because I think teachers and administrators have to have a chance to speak their mind. Even if you decide something that they're against, they have to have a chance to say, okay, well, I spoke my mind and I'm going to get on board with the decision in the end. And we have to let them be able to do that, right?
And Ember has been so great about going to the schools, and teachers have been speaking up and speaking their minds, and I think she's going to continue to encourage that.
Yeah,
I mean, for the last 3 years, I mean, I go to all of our staff, and I said this before, when this fall was terrible for me, so I wasn't able to do it. But in the last 3 years, every quarter, I'm at every school, and I meet with their staff, and it's kind of this open, you know, tell me the rumors, and there's some funny ones, actually. You know, and it's share some of your concerns. And so I meet with the union reps. And so it's just an interesting culture I've never been part of.
Yeah, I don't know how,
Well, back to the survey. Have the results of the survey been made?
Okay, so we, the strategic planning committee, Phil Kaplan is facilitating that. I'll be honest, what's happened is that there were so many comments, and when you get into qualitative research and then trying to code and themes and then trying to do an actual report of what would be representative, the committee members aren't trained in doing this type of coding, that they've had to call in statisticians to help them, and now it's like this massive project. So we met yesterday, and timelining it is, when can we get this information out?
And what did you come up with?
Sooner,
long sooner.
One of them said by May, and then there was some conversation that said, no, we need it by April. So even within the committee, there's some conversation.
Can I speak to that for a second on the culture? There's something that seems to be smelling right now at the Learning Center.
Okay.
I'm hearing rumors, and this is because I kind of like to advocate for these kids.
Absolutely.
Because it's who I am. I'm hearing Learning Center's closing, that there's cutbacks.
In fact, we're adding positions.
Okay, I know, but so you know that this is happening.
Interesting.
I mean,
okay.
Yes, so, and I don't know what the source of it is,
okay,
but the kids are talking about it.
Interesting. Okay,
and
thank you.
It's not feeling good, so no.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, like, the rumor mill's working overtime, and they're going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, actually, we are adding we're adding an elective position, so instead of the students having to go over into the high school to do some of their electives, we're actually adding some of those over into the Learning Center.
Good.
Now, one of the things we are looking at the Learning Center is changing delivery, so making it more, making it more career-oriented, so getting them into more career-type pathways. So when they actually do graduate, which we have a great graduation rate for our Learning Center. And for those of you that know, our Learning Center is maybe not an alternative. It's more of a net for those students that need extra support and maybe a different type of environment to learn and go through high school. But we're looking specifically on getting them into different pathways, so then when they do graduate, they have certificates that they then can go get jobs with. So,
has there been any exit studies that come out of that about how those kids succeed over time that they wouldn't have? I mean,
that's a good question. You know what? I can find out.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be happy to find out. Molly, can you remember that to help me remember to find out? I know we do exit surveys with all of our seniors. And they're included in that, of course.
Yeah, but over time.
Yep.
You know,
it's a hard one.
I can imagine it would be. Keeping track. There are some people that have seen some kids that.
Well, one of ours.
Gainfully employed, you know, and off of the drug path and onto it.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought that they were closing the Learning Center down because aren't we trying to reintegrate it into the high school? Like, to physically move it from a separate building back into the high school building.
That is. So one of the things, that's a great segue. One of the things I've asked Bob O'Connor to do is we continue to have more issues with Treasure Mountain. If you were at our last coffee, we addressed some of the real issues around Treasure Mountain, and I just got another report this week about another issue. And so as we look at that, we know it's time to really put a planning process for our ninth graders going back into the high school and expanding the high school. So what we've asked is, if you recall during the bond, we had put some design teams together. And so we've asked to pull that high school design team back together. And there's some parameters saying, don't worry about transition. You know, don't worry about how long this is the transition period of when this gets built. But let's look at options. Come up with four options. Go into the north, south, east, west, combination of all the above. And then be able to present it to the community, push those out, costs associated. It will require us to go out to get an architect. So the architect is part of the design process through the entire thing. But how does this relate to the Learning Center? We start with our programming needs. We're looking at having the Learning Center part of the high school to start integrating that, because what we would like to do is create more of a career tech ed blended learning community, and it may not be just for our at-risk kids. It's maybe for students that want flexible scheduling or an alternative to the 0 hour for high AP students, but then looking at our medical, our engineering. Medical has unique, engineering has unique spaces, as does our culinary. And so making sure that those spaces are really well thought of, and then of course our music program. And so I anticipate they'll start meeting and probably by, it's gonna take a while, October, November, come up with some options of what this looks like of expansion, and then we'll start pushing it out to the community. But I think a lot of it is, you're exactly right, that the Learning Center is the thought is moving the group of students back into having a school within a school.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a question about the school realignment proposal. You know, it seems like you're pretty much locked into this two intermediate school plan where you have a 5-6 school and a 7-8 school, probably one a middle school and one a junior high. Why is that? Well, how has that come to be, or why? Because it's just very, very unusual. If you do research, it's really hard pressed to find where people will have two schools at that intermediate level.
So where did what that, do you mean, two schools originate? At intermediate? 5, 6, 7, 8?
Well, no, I mean, if you look at the research, now the trend is back to K-8, actually. But you find schools that are middle schools that are 5, 6, 7, 8, You find middle schools that are 6, 7, 8, and middle schools that are 7, 8. You don't find a junior high and a middle school under two different concepts in the same district.
It is 6, 7, 8, 9?
Sorry?
Are you talking about the current 6, 7, 8, 9?
No, no. No, I understand why you have it now, because you have 8, 9 school, which is a little high school. The whole little high school concept has kind of gone south over the years. So why are we still maintaining or proposing to maintain a junior high school that would be 7, 8?
7, 8.
And a middle school that would be 5 or 6? Where did that all come from? Why are we trying to do that?
I think that was to try to take advantage of the cost of building the junior high school to build a school that's big enough for kids that are treasure sized. It's cheaper to send them to Ecker and then build another school that's more 5, 6 sized because kids are smaller, so I guess the building's cheaper.
See, but that's my point. Too often education is built around building, not philosophy.
I'm going to go back to building. I'm not, and forgive me, I'm still not understanding your question.
Give me a shot at it. Just from analyzing how the kids are, I've had 2 go through the system. I have a current 1 in high school, and every child's at a different level of education or ability to absorb. My perspective is you got to start at the high school level, really, because that's where the education levels really start to pop up. So you got to figure out, how do I get my child prepared for that, especially the more advanced kids, the kids that really want to push the envelope and move on. The concept, I believe, of having a 9th grade, let's just start there, a 9th grade attached to the high school, I think is a critical aspect. Because there are a certain percent of the population, you probably have analysis of that. What percent of 9th graders are ready for 10th grade classes, not 10th grade maturity level.
And I
really disagree with integrating 9th graders into a high school at an early age if they don't have to. By having their own separate schools. So that's where I'm going to get into a discussion later about planning. But I think those children need access to higher math classes, higher English classes, higher whatever. And the further you get them away from that, it's just not going to happen. Then you're moving kids, busing them, and things like that. So just starting there, I believe, you know, a 9th grade makes sense closer to the high school, attached to it. Somewhat separated. I'll get to that later.
Okay.
Then you're left. Okay, I got an 8th grade, a 7th grade, a 6th grade, and a 5th grade. And I see your point is, well, now you're, why not bring those together, leave 5th grade there, bring the 3. I think we had 9th off on itself with an 8, 7, 6 type of thing. Then it becomes a building issue, quite frankly, I think is where they're at.
Yeah, but why don't we figure out what's best for the kids first?
Right.
And then, the community will pay for what's right for the kids, right?
Yes.
It's like, why are we talking about buildings, you know?
So when
it does, but we got to first decide what's right for the kids without thinking about buildings.
One more question, and that's going to be
a good point on that would be, if you end up putting 9th grade where it should be, in my belief, closer to the high school, you got 5, 6, 7, and 8. Now you start developing the same issue with, you know, say a 6th grader. You know, might be ready to take those classes in 7 and 8th grade.
But in Utah, 6th grade are elementary school.
I know.
So.
But you're having them off at their own school.
But I have 5th graders going over to 6th grade, and it's by parent. They drive them.
They drive them over. See, I mean, in those circumstances where you have super kids that are doing, you know, high achievers, Davidson-type kids, they move. Those parents have to recognize that in that child and make it happen. And they're doing stuff online. They're doing all sorts of stuff. So if we're really doing the greater good, we have to work with the data that we have for those kids and say, what's going to work with that group? And I am one of those people that thought that 9th grade should be with the high school, because all the way around, you know, their grades start counting, the GPA, you know, all of that is all lumped together. So why we
didn't... I don't think anybody here disagrees with ninth grade
well, so we can do ninth grade. Yeah. So we got to do that. Yeah, and we have to
as
make that happen.
As a high school principal, I might fight that. Because my ninth graders were so immature. And now they're so immature. And finally by February of their ninth grade year, they finally are at least somewhat aware of what they're doing. But, I mean, that's my own philosophy.
But they need to wake up. And I know I have very immature... but they still have to, they know that academically it all counts in ninth grade and they have to take those classes. And they were walking, what was nice about it is that the ninth grade at least was close enough to the high school. They could walk over for band and Chinese and the advanced math, all of that was close enough to be doable on this campus situation right now. But we know we have a terrible building and we have to deal with that.
We have to.
So it's gonna, that'll work out. The grade alignment is gonna work out when we.
So I threw it out to my.
I'm not sure it is. From what I heard, it doesn't make any sense to me personally. It comes from a middle school background. They have two different philosophies in 4 years.
So I threw it right. So let me
back to my original question. Why are we doing both? Because it's just unheard of to have a junior high and a middle school. That's just not.
We have a junior high and a middle school now.
Excuse me?
We have a junior high and a middle school.
That's because you have ninth grade in the junior high, which is probably appropriate.
Right.
But ninth grade is going to the high school.
So
and
I'll
now
use
we have 7, 8, and 5, 6. Why a different transition and why a different program? We were talking about middle level kids. It seems like you can come up with a program, whatever it happens to be, that you feel is appropriate, whether it's 5, 6, 7, 8, 6, 7, 8, or 7, 8, or K-6 or whatever. It seems to me like dividing it and having two different concepts is.
Well, you know, and I threw this out to my elementary teachers, and I asked every single one of my elementary staffs. I said, you know what, if there is discussion around the 5-6 versus a pre-K-6, what are your thoughts on it? And it was really interesting to hear the teacher's perspective of this. You know, and I will say, Molly was there, so she can support me. I'm not making this up. There were pockets of maybe one or two teachers in each staff that said, you know, the pre-K-6 is my preference. Across the board, the preference was to have the fifth graders and the sixth graders together because of maturity levels and pure changes of, and I got to thinking about this because I was an elementary principal as well and an elementary teacher, having a three-year-old and a four-year-old program, and then having a 12-year-old, you know, and they do mix in when you're getting into busing. There's no way to, you know, they mix together. And so across the board, and Molly, maybe you can give me some of the comments if you remember that they said just curricularly, the way that they're maturing, that their preference was to have that, have the 5-6 together. And also to have, right, and then it was interesting, a lot of the teachers have sixth grade students, and they said they're not ready to go with our seventh graders. Maturity-wise, they're just not quite there. They're having a hard time transitioning. So that was a couple of the comments that were made.
And I remember when table to table in the staff meetings to get the feedback from the teachers who said, what's your vision of a realignment? What would your ideal realignment be? And overwhelmingly, that's I think where we started moving from. We talked to the teachers.
What was overwhelming?
The response that to have the fifth and sixth graders out of the elementary school separated from the, because now it's pre-K included in the elementaries.
I mean, from their perspective, it was, and again, this is anecdotal. It wasn't, you know, a formal survey.
Right. Right.
It was just us talking to them and having open conversations.
I'd like to add a couple comments. One, just your perspective on growth in the district. I mean, obviously, since I've been here, and I think we'll continue to see it, growth tends to occur in the elementary years.
Has what?
Growth tends to come in the elementary schools.
Okay.
Because that's when parents can move families. Where do you see and where do you predict over the next 5 years where the significant, maybe harder to project growth can come from?
You know, and I'm in a predicament right now with Trailside, so I'll use it as an example. we have the need to add 3 classroom teachers to Trailside, and I am adding that into the budget for the board to hopefully approve. That's great that we want to add 3 teachers and reduce those class sizes, but we have no place to put those teachers. And so as you look at the boundaries of Trailside, and this is without open enrollment, because there's, and I would have to pull my numbers exactly, I don't remember how many are in Trailside. The border is huge right there on the corridor of 40 and 80 for growth. So we have some opportunity. I also know that the county just purchased or put a place to purchase option on the acreage east of Jeremy. And so as they look at that and developing that, we're gonna have to be able to look at, what are ways to partner with them, with our fields, with our facilities, transportation. That's a huge plus for us for transportation, because they're gonna have to now fix or come up with some solutions of the roundabout and the Jeremy entrance. So growth is continuing to occur. And I'll tell you right now, our biggest population of who has registered for this next school year of families moving in are the 8th, 9th, 10th graders. Mm-hmm. So it's not elementary. What we're actually finding is that the families with younger kids, it's harder to find anywhere that they can afford to
buy. That's what I was going to say. The growth is so hard to predict because nobody with young kids can afford to move here. I mean, not nobody, but they're moving to Camas and Heber and, the surrounding areas. So I don't know that the growth is going to be as drastic as...
That may change if they build over in that corner.
Right, and
there.
That's
those will be a lower cost housing.
We have conversations going, and this has been an interesting process, with North Summit, South Summit, and Wasatch. And sometimes I'm not very politically correct in those meetings, where I finally said, until you give us tax money to educate these kids, we're not opening enrollment. And that didn't go real well in that meeting. No, it didn't.
It took a bunch away.
Well, so we're meeting again to see with, what can we offer as far as solutions. One of our biggest obstacles for our 9th, 10th, 11th graders in this area is the state-funded CTE programs, Career and Tech Ed. And so we're looking at, I've already boycotted our Career and Tech Ed for the state, so our kids get nothing out of it as far as the money that we put in for it. And so we're looking at what are some ways to maybe do a joint Career and Tech Ed Center for our kids, and do more of a PC CAPS model for them. So I don't know if I really answered, where's the growth? Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to predict.
Well, I'm just kind of wondering, because I've heard, we're going all day kindergarten, and I think we're going to see pulling some kids that may have gone to private because half day wasn't meeting the family's needs.
Or may not have come at all.
I think you've talked about expanding pre-K and piloting full-day pre-K over
yep.
at Poland.
And we have done that this year, and it's been really successful.
So I think that could pull even more out of the private pre-Ks. So I've kind of shifted my thinking and looking at numbers, and it was Dave Gomez at the retreat that the light bulb went on when he mentioned it, was looking at the functional and the developmental needs of our youngest learners. The learners where you are already committed tremendous resources
yep.
to get those kids integrated, not only the kids, but their families, get them the language skills that they need by the time they leave kindergarten. So I started looking at this whole thing and saying, well, wait a minute, should we back up? Because I think right now with your 5-6 plan and looking at expanded programs, that within 2 years you're going to still be out of room.
What was
the
that?
Elementaries. You're going to be out of room at the elementaries.
Oh.
So I looked at and ran a bunch of numbers about doing an early education family center.
Okay.
Right now, just for projected for 2016, pre-K and K is the size almost of an elementary school. It's 480 kids.
Both of them together, your 3- and 4-year-olds, is that what you said?
Well, in kindergarten.
K
kindergarten and pre-K?
Kindergarten? Currently.
Well, yeah, projected.
Or for next year. Now, I think you're a little higher for the...
Well, I went through all the numbers.
Well, and what we're finding, you're exactly right, we're finding more kindergarten registrations because of the full days.
So I'm thinking functionally and developmentally, I think those kids' needs are as unique as any in the population. You go into the Montessori schools, you go into Soaring Wings, you go into Little Miners, they don't look like an elementary school. They are totally geared and scaled around those age groups. And I think as you start expanding the preschool programs, you're going to find out you're going to be doing a lot of retrofitting in the elementary schools just to make the scale work, if nothing else, just the size.
We already have. I mean, we're already seeing that.
And, you know, you talk about, no matter what we do, we've got transportation issues, we've got preferences, we've got community schools, whatever you look at. But right now, that population for years until we brought pre-K into the public schools has been satisfied through private schools where parents are driving them to different locations. So I think from the numbers, I think financially it makes more sense. I think a 5-6 school with the administration overhead for 2 grades is pretty significant. I think it's going to give you more ability and flexibility in your programs. And I think now you can take all the resources that you're already providing, centralize them in a center, and focus on not only the kids but getting the families involved. And the numbers, I mean the numbers, as I started working on this, I just started kind of falling into place, that you might actually avoid building an elementary school longer going this way.
You know, and I think those are those things that we're open to. I think that's where I come back to. We've learned a lot through the bond. And one thing is there are some certs. Ethically and in protection of our students and our staff, I have to do something with Treasure Mountain. And so that's a domino. And that's something that I'm actually going to start pushing really hard with the new information that I have. With that, then the next domino is our 9th grade out of there and our 8th grade somewhere. I mean, that's, I just am, I'm willing to fight to get rid of Treasure Mountain and fight hard because it's just not safe. And so, but the rest of it, I'm open, you guys. I've taught at elementary, middle, was at the high school, then in elementary. I've taught at the college level. So I see there really is not, in my mind, the best. It's what works with the communities that engage around our students.
Well, I also think pre-K is such a new concept in the public education system. I mean, how many states aren't even funding it?
You know, and that's something, so I'm glad you asked this. And I think we have,
Molly, we have about 5 more minutes.
Yeah. So, Granite and Park City follow an amazing preschool model. And that's something, Molly, if we could set up some tours and some videos. I'm going to tell you, in watching in other states how preschools ran, even at the Head Start, and I have my own concerns with Head Start. Our preschool is amazing. And so, you know, really banking on what we know is extremely successful. I mean, to the point where we have a group of superintendents that haven't seen this, that they're willing to now start funding it within their own across the state of Utah. But I think, I mean, I'm open. I don't have any preconceived ideas. I mean, I have a first grader. Dual language doesn't work for him. I'm moving him to Trailside. You know, I mean, it's not a one size fits all for every kid. Yeah.
Are you at liberty to share what you learned?